The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Never have Victorians felt so divided, yet so appreciative of our northern neighbours. The New South Wales and Victorian border has been closed, leaving those from Albury, Redonga and Echuco Moama in a massive pickle. Yet if it wasn't for New South Wales and Queensland, the 2020 AFL season might be dead and buried. So off the top of this socially distant Fox Footy podcast, thank you to the northern states. Even if your lack of judgment around Australia's most livable city is still questionable, without you, an entire industry would be on its knees. We'll discuss the mass migration of Victorian clubs, chaos at Collingwood, early flag contenders and more on the Fox Footy podcast. Ben Waterworth with you, as is crowd noise expert, self-appointed Tom Morris. Hello, Thomas.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Max. It's great to be with you. Yeah, the crowd noise is, I find, interesting every week. And I think...
it's been getting louder, hasn't it? Definitely getting louder.
I've got to be careful because I don't want to blatantly criticise other networks, but yes. I do think Fox has it. Let me say this. I think Fox has done it right by making it an undercurrent behind the game rather than a very loud and slightly overbearing, you know, dominating part of the game, which I noticed on Sunday. In fairness, I haven't really noticed elsewhere, but I just think it's important we get that right because it's going to affect the way you watch it.
It was noticeable on Sunday. I was certainly watching that game between Richmond and Melbourne. The other voice you just heard as well is the aspiring mayor of Euroa, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxie.
Hello, Benny. Hello, Tom. Yeah, I've never seen so many shots of bridges across the Murray River on the top of the news as we did last night. Very exciting.
So why are you the aspiring mayor of Euroa, though, of all places?
Well, I got to get out of Melbourne, clearly. Yeah. Someone has to leave. It's no good here.
How are you, Ben?
I'm all right, Tom. As I said, I was hyped though on Sunday watching the end of that Richmond Melbourne game, and just feeling like I was on edge. I don't know why I was on edge watching the end of that game because you know obviously you're trying to multitask a little bit in our roles, but it just felt like as I was sort of peering over the computer screen and watching the game unfolding that they were in the midst of a preliminary final that was you know with. You know, less than a kick in it with 2 minutes to play for like an entire half. It just made me anxious.
There's lots of teething issues this year, and that's one of them. Hopefully, we can get it right, and hopefully, bigger crowds can get back. I think now that games are out of Victoria, it should be easier to add crowd noise because it just adds to the noise that's already in the stadium. I mean, it still have an impact, but hopefully, by the end of the year, wherever the grand final is, we don't need it at all, and we can have authentic crowd noise.
Mm. Well, we'll keep watch that space with plenty of interest. We're obviously doing another socially distant version of the Fox Footy podcast. We're hitting record minutes after it's been announced that another 190 COVID cases in Victoria have been declared. All the while, we've seen 10 Victorian clubs mass migrate to the northern states. And if it wasn't for the Victorian and Queensland government, who have you know been pretty strict on Victorians in general, if it wasn't for them, this AFL season would be dead and buried. And it was quite interesting, Maxie, you talked about the border shots or the bridge shots that we saw on the news on Monday night. But it's been fascinating to see all the Victorian clubs pack their bags and say goodbye to families and head to buses and then eventually on the planes to continue this season.
Yeah, I don't know how much I don't know how much warning the AFL did have from the state governments. We know they've been in touch with them pretty much every day, so it's very, very well possible they had an inkling that they needed to get the Victorian teams out ASAP because that's what they did. I think it was on Saturday it really came out that clubs are going right now. They're going on Saturday. They're going on Sunday. Everyone was interstate by Monday. Tom Lynch being the last to get across the line in his private jet from Essendon Airport. I don't know how big a private jet you could fit at Essendon Airport, but he was on it with his busted hand. So everyone's got out. And again, the AFL's done relatively well in doing so because we're going to have another 5 weeks of games, all played outside of Victoria. We've got all of the South Australian teams, the West Australian teams are going to get to go home. I mean, the Crows are already back in Adelaide, which is the one good thing for their season. So that's a positive. And then we'll see how it happens when we get back to round 11, I think it is, because the Victorian teams are going to come back, Tom. They've been told that they're allowed to come back after 5 weeks, which probably at this stage means a bye.
Yeah, as we reported on the Fox Footy website last Friday, The assurance was from the AFL to the players and the clubs that they would have an end date, and the end date will be after another 5 games. So it would be about 32 days. It might be one or two more for some teams, depending on when they leave, and one or two less for a couple of other teams. But it just gives, I guess, players some peace of mind and clubs some peace of mind that they will come back. But the biggest question for me beyond that is, how do you continue the season from there? Do you have a bye week where everyone sees their families for a week and there's no footy, then they go back into hubs again? Or do you try to get some more games out of the way with Victorian teams playing one another in Victoria,
yeah,
and then interstate teams playing one another if there's still enough games to go? I'm leaning heavily towards just having a week off,
yeah,
giving all clubs an opportunity to be at home with their families, and then condensing the last block of fixtures in interstate hubs. And that might be Perth, it might be Darwin, Canberra, Sydney, like you name it. It could be anywhere. And that's a very real possibility.
You feel like, Tommy, as well, the AFL's maybe got one bye card to play here in terms of if they still want to get this season done by the end of October. And we know that the last Saturday in October falls on the 31st of that particular month. But it feels like you probably can only afford to have maybe one bye if you don't want to ridiculously condense the season. So if they do play that card after round 11, it will be interesting because we're now in, whether it's a second spike or a second wave, whatever you want to call it in this state, where the cases are certainly increasing, not decreasing, and what the numbers could be like and what we all could be living like in Victoria by round 11 in 5 weeks' time. It's going to be fascinating to see if they play this spy card.
Well, I think there's two things we need to consider. I'm trying to get around it in my own head while I explain it. So the first is, are there enough available fixtures when the Victorian teams come back to Victoria for there to be one round of games, i.e. not every Victorian team has already played a Victorian team by then, and therefore we can get a round of games back here, and then interstate we can get the other 8 teams to play each other once. I sense there will be, but I'm not across the key details. But the more important detail that the AFL needs to consider is, what if the state governments, all of them or some of them, don't allow teams to come in and play each other while they're quarantining, in which case you'll need a bye after the Victorian teams come back and after they come back to Victoria. So there's a lot on the plate of the AFL at the moment. I'm sure they're considering all options. I would be surprised if the season finished any time before October 31. I think that's a best case scenario at this point.
There's a lot on the plate at Collingwood as well, Tom, and you've been all over the Pies, particularly over the past 48 hours. In relation to new charges laid against Jordan De Goey. It comes, you know, we recorded the podcast before the Steel side bottom incident and subsequent ban occurred last week, all while they've lost Jeremy Howe, potentially for the rest of the season. An investigation into the club's culture from 2005 to 2014, stemming from racism claims via Aridia Lumumba, is going in, and they've re-announced that being an independent investigation, all while they've now gone interstate as one of the 10 clubs to continue the AFL season. Maxi, it's not an ideal time for the Pies, to say the least.
No, having both off-field and on-field stuff all at once is obviously disappointing. I do wonder how much of this has become a bigger deal than it would at any other club because of Eddie Maguire. You do wonder if he draws more attention to things because of his role in the AFL media as a personality. And do you think that's intentional as well? Is it possible that he's trying to draw scrutiny on purpose from people? I mean, he's been criticised over the last sort of week for his handling of the Steel side bottom thing and his views on how players should be punished. And at the same time, that does draw away attention from those players. That may even be intentional. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it is intentional, but I can't say for sure. What I do know is that the benefits of having Eddie Maguire as your president outweigh the negatives. And that's proven by the fact he's been in the role for more than 20 years now, I think. But it doesn't mean that in isolation, specific incidents or specific things he says doesn't make it hard for the Pies. I've been very critical of their recent press releases, one that left out the fact that Steel Sidebottom was taken home by police. And in the next press release where they refused to, they actually openly said that that the Steel Sidebottom penalty was excessive. And this was just a month after Eddie Maguire, their president, said on Footy Classified that people who footy players who misfire should get $100,000 fines and be banned for the year. So there's a lot of inconsistencies going on at the moment. I don't think any of that's the end of the world. I mean, it's what makes the footy industry spin. I don't think we should get too caught up in it. But it's certainly been a terrible couple of weeks for the Pies, culminating in a charge of sexual assault being laid against Jordan Dugowie on Saturday, which made things even worse.
That's just what I want to get to, Tom. And you broke the yarn as well on foxfooty.com.au that this charge against Jordan Dugowie stemming from an alleged incident 5 years ago and an investigation took place 2 years ago, a fresh charge against Dugowie had been laid. I suppose, firstly, I mean, I'm going to get into legal jargon more than anything else, but there was, I suppose the main feedback that I've seen you've been copying in recent days has been the difference between reporting it as indecent assault and sexual assault. In your best layman's terms, can you explain what the specificities around the charters and why Collingwood have said it's indecent assault and you are saying sexual assault?
Yeah, well, I mean, the best way to explain is to give a rundown of what happened. So I got a tip off about the story. I chased the story. I notified you, Ben, and started to file the story. But to confirm it 100%, I needed to contact Victoria Police. And Victoria Police will not say that Jordan Dugowie has been charged. They won't say that any name has been charged. But they will say that a 24-year-old man from Hampton East has been charged with whatever it is, sexual assault or indecent assault or any other charge. Jaywalking, it doesn't matter. Like, they never say the name of the person.
Yep.
So anyway, before we hit publish on the story, I got the statement from Victoria Police, which confirmed that two 24-year-old men, incidentally, one of them being Jordan Dugowie, had been charged with sexual assault. And in the same statement, they referred to the charge as indecent assault. So I went with what was at the top of the statement, which was sexual assault. And that's what we went with. Jordan Dugowie charged with sexual assault because that's what Victoria Police had given me in a statement. I wasn't making it up. Now, Collingwood's statement referred to it as indecent assault, which I think to the layman, indecent assault is a far lesser charge than sexual assault. But the truth is, and this is speaking to a criminal lawyer, this is speaking to Victoria Police after the story went out, the two terms under the eyes of the law are used interchangeably because indecent assault was only a charge until July 2015. Now, this alleged incident took place in May 2015.
Right.
So if the same alleged incident happened now, it would be sexual assault. Back then, it was indecent assault. In the eyes of the judge, if it does get to trial, it's exactly the same. The issue is, and it's always the same with these sort of cases, Max, with football players or anyone in the public, you write sexual assault and the layman or the person that doesn't quite understand, they think that's rape, and it's not rape. If he had been alleged to have raped anyone, he would have been charged with rape, and that is not the case. It is a sexual assault charge, and there's sort of a stigma that goes with that. So it's a really difficult one. Collingwood called me and said, you've got it wrong. It's indecent assault. And I said, no, I've checked this, and it is both. It is either, whichever one you want to use. And I went, as I always will, with the Victoria Police, over Collingwood, over any football club or private business, because they're always going to look to at least publicly downgrade it. Victoria Police are neutral, and that's why I went with sexual assault. I hope that explains it.
That explains it perfectly. And, you know, it is a delicate situation, particularly in the aftermath now with Dugowie, who, because he's had to check in with Victoria Police, hasn't flown to Sydney to be part of this Collingwood Hawthorn clash. He instead will be going straight to Western Australia when the Pies enter that WA hub.
Max, do you think he should be playing or not? Stand down or not?
It's an incredibly complex response. So my gut feeling is no, he shouldn't be playing, but there's a couple of things. One of them is how long this legal process is going to take, exacerbated by COVID, because he's not going to face court until late October, I believe. And if you were to stand him down then for the entirety of this case's process, he could miss 2 years of footy. And as we saw with the Magic Door accusations very recently, which were disproven and have gone away, Magic Door could have missed a year and a half, 2 years of footy. And it's always so dangerous with that. And people will bring up the idea of innocence until proven guilty. You have to keep in mind that that's for the courts. That's for the legal system to worry about. We can we don't have to assume guilt or innocence. We can be informed by what information is in front of us. And so a business like the AFL has to deal with the ramifications of a player being accused of this, and to stand them down like the NRL stands down players is more a statement of, to be involved with our league and be associated with us while these charges are hanging over you is not something we can accept.
Yeah.
So to try and answer your question, I don't think I would stand him down, but I would not be against it at the same time.
What about you, Ben?
No, I mean, I think I'm in the Maxi camp. I was interested in terms of the, and which you pointed out as well, Tom, on the differentiation between, well, not differentiation, but just the stance that the NRL has and the firm stance and like black and white stance it has in terms of when a player should be stood down in terms of if he has been charged with something that might be carry a maximum sentence of 11 years or more.
Yep.
Now, this indecent assault charge, from what you've pointed out, the maximum is 10 years. So even if he was an NRL player, Jordan Ngoi, and had been dealt this charge, he would still be allowed to play from an NRL.
Yeah, that's true. But I've since found out, and I'm no NRL expert, that the NRL CEO, or might be the chairman, has a veto power. So right. I don't know whether it's I should know it's the chairman or CEO, but let's say it's Richard Goyder or Gillon McLachlan, if it's the NRL, would be able to say, look, I know it's not 11 years or whatever the threshold is, but you should still stand down. And they've got that power to do so. It's a really interesting debate because there's a great article I thought that I didn't necessarily agree with, but a great article by Jessica Halloran in The Australian, which argued that Jordan Ngoi should be stood down. Like you guys, I'm sort of halfway between, but I would probably err on allowing him to play while this is playing out. But if it was just an iota more serious, the charge, i.e. rape, then I would probably think he should be stood down.
Well, so adding complexity to it, Tom, is what you reported on Monday, that his alleged victim had actually said to Victoria Police, written to them, that she did not want to press charges. And obviously that makes things more difficult too, because if they don't want to press charges, yet the police are going forward with them, there's so many reasons why Victoria Police would be going forward with the case. They would have some level of evidence towards the case, you would suggest. And there's so many reasons why a victim in this sort of case would not want charges to be pressed, whether they don't want to deal with the ramifications of a case and the public scrutiny that would come alongside that.
Yeah.
They might just want to move on emotionally. They might have been told they're not going to win the case. You can't make the assumption, I'm sure quite a few people have done this reading it, if they're not too aware of all of these issues and how we've progressed as a society. There are so many reasons why a victim would say, I don't want to press charges, even if something did happen.
Yeah, and there's nothing that I know that says the victim, the alleged victim, still has changed her mind or hasn't changed her mind. We don't know. This is the thing. Mm-hmm. With police matter, we don't know. So Victoria Police could have found new evidence. They could have found another witness to the alleged crime. Anything could have happened, and it might have nothing to do with the alleged victim. We just don't know. So what I reported was fact, but I think anything beyond that is just guesswork. We don't really know what's gone on behind the scenes. We haven't seen a charge sheet. We don't know what Jordan Ngoi's lawyer will contend or argue. We don't know what the alleged victim's lawyer, if she has one, will say. We don't know what Victoria Police has recommended to the Office of Public Prosecution, that they're the people that actually push the charge. There's so many unanswered questions here, and it's all in the realm of a COVID-19 time and football. And the fact, from a football perspective, Ngoi doesn't have a manager and he's out of contract at the end of the year. So there's a bit going on.
Certainly is. And we'll obviously be right across it on foxfooty.com.au. Now on the Fox Footy podcast, time for Australia's favourite segment. And it's been heavily, heavily touted this week, it has to be said, behind the scenes, Fair or Farce.
All right. Ben.
Why is this so hyped this week, Tom, Fair or Farce?
He's very excited. Maybe someone else DM'd him.
No, there's no DMs this week, unfortunately. Now, there's a few vexed issues here. So, Ben, I'll go to you first.
Oh, right.
Fair or Farce, the AFL should start conditioning its clubs and players to not play in Victoria again this year. Fair or Farce?
Yeah, it's deep. Fair, I think. I really don't know, because there's We all want certainty. The media all want certainty. I'm sure the AFL clubs and the AFL itself want certainty. There's just no way that there can be certainty. But probably that's why I'm maybe leaning towards fair, because as it stands at the moment with, you know, case numbers and our situation with borders, as we flagged off the top of the show, maybe there is, we're not in a good space at the moment in Victoria. So maybe clubs and players from Victorian clubs should be getting their heads around the possibility, and italicise possibility, that we might not be seeing another game in Melbourne this year. So
it's very possible. Well, yep.
You have to keep in mind the numbers right now are worse than they were when we suspended the season for 2-3 months. So if that's what caused us to stop playing footy, obviously that was a different time. We were still dealing with how you would possibly play sport in this interim period, and we've come back under all of these precautions to get the season back up and running. But that's how bad it is right now, and that's how serious it is in Victoria basically alone. So it has to be a real possibility. So the AFL clubs have to be at least aware that that could happen.
Yep. I think two very good answers. I agree. Fair or fast, Max, commenting on player physiques is fat shaming.
So is this in regard to Jake Stringer?
You can use that as an example if you'd like, yes. But generally speaking, if a commentator says that a player is fat or overweight, is that fat shaming?
In the literal sense, fair. That is what it is. You can understand that players are held to a certain fitness standard because you need to be at a certain level of fitness to play Australian football. But the way that Jake Stringer was criticised because, I guess, his Guernsey wasn't completely tight on rock-hard abs was very questionable for mine. And obviously, I'm not anyone to criticise anyone about their physique. If you've ever seen me, but I did find it puzzling. You can point it out. It's something you are seeing, and commentators on TV are trying to describe the images in front of them so often.
Yeah.
But it was a puzzling point of discussion on Friday night.
Generally speaking, Max, do you think it's fair to say that a player is looking out of shape?
In a broad sense, no. Because if it is affecting the way they are playing the game and they look like they are getting tired more and therefore are playing worse, that's analysis of their career. That's analysis of them as an AFL player. If you're saying, gee, Jake Stringer's looking a bit, bit in a good paddock, that's different. That's not analysis. Yeah. That's saying he's got a bit of a gut, which is ridiculous.
What I was going to say, Tommy, as well, this whole story has reminded me of a Herald Sun article, I think in late 2014, where Dane Swan was put on the back page of the paper, and how that was presented was probably, in my view, was probably more along the lines of fat shaming than how the Stringer commentary was presented on Friday night, because that was the conversation seemed to be more observational and more probably a bit more casual rather than a fat shame. Whereas like in 2014, Swanee was on the back page of the paper with a still shot, and how it was kind of presented was probably more along the other line.
So Max, explain to me, if you're a commentator, how, and you look at a player and you think to yourself, geez, he's really overweight for a footballer. How would you word that to be respectful, but do your job?
Depending on the context, if this is in regards to Stringer at that point when it was brought up, I would say something along the lines of, wow, Stringer's playing really well tonight. He may not be in the best shape we've seen in his career, but he's impressing me with the way he's kicking two goals and doing quite well. Yeah. If you frame it in a positive light around it, that really helps. And look, to be honest, that was low down on my list of problems with the commentary.
I understand. But I've got one more question for you then. Yeah. Would you phrase it differently if you're commentating AFLW?
At this point, I would.
Yep.
Because we still have a ways to go with the way we, as both the media and as a society, treat women's sport.
Yep.
But at some point, I totally understand the argument. I think Robbo's written about this before, during the AFLW season, that they need to be able to accept criticism if they're going to be compared to men's competitions.
Yep.
So there's obviously a very dangerous middle ground there that you are, a middle ground you need to find.
Interesting discussion, Ben.
Mm. Very interesting.
I think, if I don't say so myself, seeing as I brought it up. Ben, fair or farce, if there was no cut to the soft cap, Simon Goodwin's job would be in serious danger. Fair or farce?
No, it's a. I think it's a farce because I think there's more bigger things at play this year in terms of more than cash. In terms of it's not a full season. There are so many other things at play in terms of venues played out, lack of home games, inequality.
Let me rephrase it. I'm saying because Melbourne can't afford to sack him, do you think that if they could afford to sack him, they would?
No, because those other things are too bigger at play. It's more than cash, for instance. And they've already had to make cuts in terms of all clubs, assistant coaches and football department staff and other staff and board have unfortunately been let go. So I think there's already been financial hits taken in that place. I wonder if any coach will go this year. Obviously, Ken Hinckley's saved himself, certainly for the time being, with Port Adelaide's start to the season. So that certainly helped. But whether Melbourne's position at the moment has been hindered to the point where he's going to go, I'm not entirely sure. But at the same time, it's only round five.
Yeah. There's more time, but Melbourne are not playing good footy.
No, they're not.
Max, fair or fast? It's first time fair or fast has also had the word fair in the question or in the statement.
I'm glad you've tracked that stat.
Yeah. Max, fair or fast? It's fair if a player doesn't want to go to a hub because he has a couple of kids to look after with his wife. Fair or fast?
Fair, though I need more information on the specifics of that.
This player would just want to stay at home and help his wife because his wife is working and only one of the kids is at primary school.
So you're talking about maybe a five-year-old and a three-year-old?
Yeah.
I think that's still fair. You have to consider that the context of all of this, and I wrote about this on Sunday night. You've got two Richmond players, Bashar Hooley and Shade Edwards, staying back because their partners have either just given birth or are about to in the next month or so.
Yep.
That's very understandable. I think anyone reasonable looks at that and says, yeah, no, that's fair enough. It's basically paternity leave.
Yes.
Go ahead. And players miss games all the time because their partner's giving birth. It just so happens that right now they'd be forced to go interstate.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be quite lenient on this more generally. And particularly in Melbourne right now, if you live in the northern suburbs, the western suburbs, you're potentially going into lockdown if you're in a certain postcode, although you've probably moved out by now because that had to happen very quickly. And you've got potentially leaving someone at home with two kids who need caring, who need to be taken around. Maybe you've got a partner who's ill. Maybe you've got a partner who has just a medical reason why they don't want to go out as much. There are so many complicated factors, not to mention just the scariness of coronavirus. It's just scary right now to know I'm going interstate for 5 weeks. Best of luck, everyone back home. So I would be totally understanding if a player said, look, I'm just not comfortable with this.
Ben, thoughts?
Oh, yeah. To be honest, I totally agree. I think players deserve, certainly on the field, to be, because people normally pay good money, or they certainly pay memberships normally to see their favourite players go about their business. But I think we need to laud the players here because they are under stricter protocols than most of the general community. And they are keeping a season alive when in worldwide sport at the moment, there are not a lot of competitions running at the moment. And so I think the players need to be given a break here in circumstances where it's fair. The debate around pay is, I find, interesting, and whether players should be paid if there's an elongated time away. But in the general sense, I think players deserve a bit of credit here.
On that pay issue, I don't know the exact specifics of employment law, but can a business actually say, we're not going to pay you if you don't go interstate for 5 weeks right now?
I think it would be a sign of goodwill that the business would still pay the employee, even though they're not working for them in that situation. My issue, I agree with you completely, Max and Ben, that if there's an illness or if there's, if there's a health reason or if someone's either
family issue,
a family issue, if there's a reason, but and it hasn't happened yet, but I would have very little sympathy for a person who simply didn't want to go because it's going to be a little bit hard to get a babysitter or because there's another family member that can't go and look after the kids. I think there's an element of do your job for 5 weeks, so long as there's none of those other varying factors that come into it.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be really interesting to hear, just a shameless plug as well for AFL 360 on Tuesday night. It's going to be very interesting to hear what Jack Riewoldt has to say. Riewoldt's made the trip with the Tigers yesterday north, yep. and he'll be on FaceTime to address that, because he's been quite vocal in defending the players that don't want to go.
Ben, fair or fast? So two left. Ben, fair or fast? Monday night footy should stay for the rest of the year.
Yes, fair, I think. Because the hindrance to Monday night football has always been the lack of crowds, and that's an AFL cultural thing. I've read with interest, actually, Andrew Pridham's comments in the Sydney and the Age, actually. Daniel Cherney wrote it last week, talking about how there's a focus on, certainly from an AFL and even Victorian perspective, how we just focus too much on crowds, whereas the NRL probably don't make as big a focus. So that with that now out the window, with no crowds at the moment, I think we should be pursuing Monday night football and just watching the ratings and see how it happens. However, Tom, it means that you'll have to move from a Monday night to a Tuesday night. Will you be able to cope with that and on the couch?
I'm happy to do whatever I'm told, Ben. I'm just happy to still have a job, so yes, no true. Issue with that at all. Last fair or fast to you, Maximilian.
Mm-hmm.
Fair or fast? It's more important for football to have close games than for football to have high-scoring, one-sided matches. Fair or fast?
Fair, because high-scoring, one-sided matches, I mean, there's a couple of perspectives. From a pure viewer's standpoint, you'd rather watch a close game, although you'd rather it not be bad.
That's what I'm saying. So would you rather 53 plays 51 or 125 plays 95?
The latter's close enough that I wouldn't mind it. I'm not going to pick a specific margin where it suddenly swings the other way. But, I understand why the AFL is making the decision to talk up how close all these games have been. How great is it? Even though they're quite low scoring and there's been criticism about the dour nature of them. You can't open up the game too much and change it too dramatically, because questions about integrity pop up. And then if you get blowouts, from a TV perspective, people turn off. People stop watching as soon as games become too large a margin. So, and in this season where we're basically playing for TV only and to get money into the system and so that people can keep their jobs, that's what they need to prioritise.
Well, this is, I suppose, the recent example as well is from round five. So the Brisbane-Port Adelaide game was a 37-point lead to a 37-point win to the Lions. And that was darn entertaining. The second quarter was arguably the most exhilarating quarter we've seen so far this season. Compare that to maybe what we saw on Friday night with Collingwood and Essendon, which was only a 15-point margin, but it wasn't, a lot of the time, it wasn't pretty exhilarating football. I would have preferred to have watched Brisbane run all over Port Adelaide than Collingwood and Essendon on Friday night.
I do see that. I actually quite enjoyed the footy on the weekend. It was a little bit more free-flowing.
Friday night was good.
We always probably overestimate the state of the game discussion when it happens once or twice a year. I think it's absolutely a fair one to have, and we had on the podcast, and there's issues with the game, but we'll still tune in the next week and watch.
Any more fair or fast, Tommy?
No, that's it. That's the end of fair or fast. A proud segment.
A proud segment and heavily hyped as well, but it did live up to all expectations. Maxie, with a lot of mailbag questions this week. The punters have got a lot on their minds.
Yes, thank you everyone for writing in. If you are wondering how to contribute, we usually put out a tweet on Monday on the Fox Footy Twitter account. Just reply to that with your question, and the best ones that aren't having a go at us will be answered here on the show. So we start with Jackson, and this is about the Crows, who are obviously now the only winless team in the comp. He asks, have those like Jason Dunstall, who did the review at Adelaide and faced no scrutiny for their role in promoting the status quo, got off lightly?
How did Dunstall promote the status quo when Brett Burton left and Don Pike was sacked and there were other assistant coaches that departed and the whole playing list was given a working over as well? I'm not sure the status quo's remained from last year. Can you explain that to me, Ben?
No, I can't, because a lot of those big decisions in terms of football department staff came after the review that was led by the chief, and also Matthew Pavlich had a fair bit to do with it as well. So it's far too early to be calling for accountability from the likes of Dunstall and Pavlich, considering that the Crows have only played five games and it already kind of flagged, and as a view of pointed out quite a fair bit, Tom, that they're undertaking a serious rebuild at the moment. I think that we're all a bit surprised that they're clearly the worst team in the competition. I think a lot of us thought or predicted that they'd be in the bottom two this year, but to clearly be, and I'm happy to say clearly, the worst team in the competition, I think is a bit of a shock.
Yeah, I had them at 17th. I don't think they'll be 18th, but yeah, you're right. They've been terrible so far. They've got time to get it right. Also, if you're going to put pressure on Dunstall and Pavlich, what are you going to say? Oh, sorry, guys, you can't do a review of a footy club again. You know, it's like they've moved on. They went in, they asked questions, they did a thorough job, and their outcomes were suggestions. They didn't force anyone. They didn't force Brett Burton to leave and seek an out-of-court settlement from the club. You know, there's so many different issues at play here, and I think probably the Pavlich and Dunstall one is a very distant one.
And we have to give credit, sorry, Maxie. I was going to give credit to Sam McClure's article in The Age on Sunday, which he'd been working on for quite some time, and he's obviously garnered the trust of a lot of players and went into great detail about some of the specifics. I think maybe some people in the industry might have been aware of it or had heard rumours about, but to actually sort of put it all on the public record was really strong and really insightful, Tom. And I don't know, it's the camp that keeps on giving, and there's, you know, Caroline Wilson pretty strong last night on the AFL integrity unit's lack of action around the camp and letting it go unpunished. Is there more to come out of this camp
There's one more chapter, and that's a player or a coach going on the record and talking about the camp. At the moment, they're all anonymous sources. I'm not questioning Sam's story at all. In fact, I'm saying it was really good. But until someone actually says this is what happened and putting a face and a name to it, there's always going to be an element of conjecture. In the end, I don't think it's that relevant to Adelaide being no good now, but it certainly did impact the club over the last couple of years.
It's relevant in the fact that players left that might not have and accelerated the rebuild because of the way they were made to feel by the camp, I think. The other point I'd make on this is the response from some people, I assume Crows fans, of can't believe the media is still talking about this 2 years later, move on. It's still a big story because it never all came out, and the fallout is still being felt right now. And the investigation into it by the AFL Integrity Unit, which didn't really get the club into any trouble for all the handling of it, has to be questioned, because you read all these details and many of them were new to me, and it's just shocking to hear that sort of stuff. What are they doing dealing with a club that just made the grand final and clearly knew how to deal with hardship because of the passing of Phil Walsh? Mm. The idea that they needed to be ground down and built back up like they're soldiers, it just seems preposterous to me.
Yeah, I agree with you. It cooked the club. They admitted they got it wrong in the end, but it took them a long time. I just can't believe we're talking about it so long after, but it's just the gift that keeps on giving. And Adelaide Crows fans have gone from nothing happened, you're lying, you've got it wrong, to, oh, it doesn't matter anymore, it's irrelevant. I think the Crows fans need to stand up and understand that this was a terrible, terrible breach of trust for not all players. Some players liked it, but for too many players to make it worthwhile.
Yeah. All right. We've got one from Rob Parry, who'd like us to...
Hi, Rob.
Bring up the quiet achievers for the year so far. Maybe the clubs we haven't been talking about too much that deserve a bit of time in the spotlight.
Ben, St Kilda.
Sorry. Okay, yeah, go for it. Why have you liked the Saints so far, Thomas?
I like the Saints because I think they're entertaining to watch. And I think in a year where some of the footy's been pretty dour, it's great to sit down and actually look forward to watching a team play. I love King up forward. I love Steele's work in the midfield. I love Bradley Hill on the wing. I love Jade Gresham forward and midfield. I think Brett Ratton's coaching a specific style. I know they've played all their games in Victoria so far, which has have helped them. They've gone to Noosa now. I just really like what they're about. You know, we had huge upsets in 2016 and 2017 to win the flags, and no one would have predicted at the start of the year. I'm not saying St Kilda's going to win it, but stranger things have happened before. They've got some momentum and they're playing some pretty good footy.
You know what? I think the Giants are going a tad under the radar as well, and I understand they had two shock losses to North Melbourne and the Western Bulldogs, but they've knocked over Collingwood Collingwood really challenged them. They've knocked over Geelong in round one, and then obviously picked apart Hawthorn on the weekend. And Hawthorn weren't bad by any stretch of the imagination. The Giants were just far too good on the weekend. The Giants are sitting seventh, I think, on the ladder at the moment. They're coming. They're playing at the moment. I think is needs to be aware. We need to be very wary of. So the Giants, I think, are certainly a quiet achiever, even though their record probably doesn't suggest it at the moment.
What do you think, Max?
I want to say on the Giants, I think Leon Cameron said it pretty well in his press conference today. He said to get a win against a really good team was pleasing, but we won't beat Port Adelaide if we only have 26 inside 50s again.
Yes, that's right.
They were so incredibly efficient, remarkably so, historically so against the Hawks. That game was closer than it looked on when you watched it and by the margin, as crazy as that sounds. Maybe that's me just rating the Hawks quite a bit more than anyone else. I suppose I'd talk them up. And also, briefly on the Suns, they can still play finals even if Matt Rao doesn't play another game this year. Yep. They look competitive against Geelong all day. Their pressure fell off a bit sort of in the third and fourth quarters, but they led in the second half. They're playing a strong brand of footy. They've played most of the bad teams so far, but I think they'll be 4-2 because I think they'll beat Melbourne this week. They're positioned reasonably well, and they're probably going to play some more home games as well.
The thing is with the Suns as well, and when Rao went down on Saturday, and it was a shocking injury for Rao, and Stuart Dew revealed on 360 last night that, intimated that it was more likely going to be heading down the surgery route, meaning he might be out for the season. When he went down with that injury, it was hard not to compare it to Gary Ablett in terms of not only how it happened, but the circumstances around it in terms of the Suns were flying at the time, pushing towards finals, albeit a little bit later on in the season in terms of rounds played. But I think this is a different Suns outfit in terms of, I don't think they're as reliant on one player, even though there's a big difference between Gary Ablett and Matt Rao. They're not as reliant on their star midfielder. You talked about the brand just then. Their defense has improved, I think, out of sight. The linchpins up forward in terms of Ben King and Sam Day have got some nice chemistry happening. It's Stuart Dew's got this team humming, Tom, to use one of your favourite words.
I love watching.
They're in a pretty good spot to, I think, challenge for the eighth this year.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I still don't think they're going to challenge for the eighth, especially without Matt Rao now potentially for the rest of the year. But I think they'll probably finish between 10 and 14, and that's a win. That's a win for the Gold Coast Suns. If they're any better than that, it's a huge win. I love what they're doing. I think footy needs 18 teams who could all potentially beat anyone else on the one day. Bit of a stretch for the Adelaide Crows at the moment, but the Suns popping up and looking good is great for the AFL.
Do you guys question at all the fact that aren't they going to get concessions this year?
Yeah.
They're getting, so I'm looking at the concessions from last year. They get the first pick in the second round of, I think it's this year's draft, based on the concessions they got at the end of last year. We're handing this to a team that is in the top eight right now and realistically could be considered a contender at least in 2021.
I don't mind it too much. They were so far behind.
They certainly looked it, although it's possible we all overstated it. They definitely looked it.
Yeah, they were terrible for a couple of years. Like, they're an embarrassment to the competition. So I don't mind slightly underestimating them this year and therefore giving the concessions. You wouldn't want to do it too much, but I think the AFL's got it roughly about right.
I think if you made a bit of a song and dance about it, Max, it might get some interesting responses from the fans out there.
You're not suggesting that someone in the media would push an agenda, Ben.
I wouldn't suggest that, Max.
No one would ever have to do that. And briefly, Johnny actually asked for the mailbag, can Matt Rao win the Rising Star if he doesn't play another game this year?
No, but he could win it next year.
Yes.
Yeah, he could. Yeah, he could.
Imagine that's unfair for any of the new draftees. I know you can vote for whoever you want if you're voting for that award, but I would have thought you need to play at least 50% of the games to be eligible for any vote.
And it's not as if that this draft class is terrible outside of Matt Rao either. There are other reasonable contenders that are going to pop up.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Let's have one from Daniel Carroll, who asks about North Melbourne. Given the clear TV footage, was Ben Cunnington being selfish by declaring himself fit to play?
Ben, if I can take this one, I don't think it's up to us to say whether he was declaring himself fit to play or whether they were trying to push him into it. What I do know, these are the facts. He was a late withdrawal 2 weeks before with a back injury, and he was an early withdrawal for the back injury on Saturday. So there's clearly issues there. Reece Shaw mentioned after the game that he was that he potentially shouldn't have played. I'm willing to take that at face value. There's no reason not to trust Reece Shaw, but I think they need to be careful because he's such an important player for them.
Yeah, I know that Reece Shaw in the lead up to the game said they weren't prepared to take a risk on a guy that could barely bend down and pick the ball up. I think was that's to paraphrase him as well. So that sort of raised my eyebrow when I heard that. But they are so aware, I think, of this back injury and how delicate it is at the moment that they wouldn't have named him, particularly so early on in the season against the Dogs. They wouldn't have named him if they didn't believe that he was right to go. But obviously he wasn't right to go. So was Cunnington being selfish? I think it's probably a stretch to say that he was being selfish, because all AFL players naturally will want to go out and get on the field. Matt Rowell dislocated his shoulder on the weekend, and Stuart, you said that he wanted to head back out in the field.
Yeah, so it's a fine line, isn't it? Because you've got someone like Anthony Stevens in the 99 grand final who has a terrible ankle injury, I think it was, and somehow plays, and North Melbourne win, and he's a hero and he's brave. But imagine if he gets injured, imagine if he hurts himself or can't run out the game and they lose, all of a sudden he's selfish. So I'm happy with AFL players pushing themselves to the limit, and if occasionally it doesn't come off, well, that's the industry they're in.
Let's have one more from, I believe this man has written in before, Ben Pera. Has a question. He says, in this weird season, when do you think the top 10 that eventually will make the eight will come into effect? Usually in a 22 round season, it's about round eight.
Oh, this is probably a question for you, Max.
Yeah, Max.
I was doing some maths, and I suppose then we can discuss something slightly adjacent. I mean, round eight's approximately a third of the way through. We're almost a third of the way through. So I'd say after round six, you have a reasonably good idea who's a contender and who's not, but because it's a smaller season, the sample size isn't as big. Do we want to go through the ladder and just rule out teams completely?
Maybe go from the bottom of the ladder.
Yeah. So, Adelaide.
Out.
Yeah, out. Can Melbourne play finals?
No, I don't think they will.
No. I'd probably agree. I'm very underwhelmed again. Fremantle.
No.
Probably not. Yeah, they've been competitive, but not enough to win enough games.
No.
Can West Coast play finals?
Yes.
Yeah, just because of potentially the not cushiony run, but the more home games they might have in the back half of the season.
Yeah, and there should be 3-3 after this week, so they've got the Crows. Yep. Can Sydney play finals?
They can, but I still think it's unlikely, but I'm not ruling a line through them.
West Coast more likely to play finals than Sydney.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the bottom four right now is Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide. Sydney has just got no one with any sort of height. If you're 190 centimetres and you live in Sydney, go to sign up right now. You might get the game. They're so stuffed. North Melbourne, can they play finals?
Well, no, I don't think so.
But really?
No, I don't think they will. Nah, they're 2-6. No, what are they? Sorry, 2-3. I mean, all these teams, apart from really the bottom three, can.
Okay, let's change it. Will North Melbourne play finals?
No, I'm not putting them in the eight. No. I'm also not putting Carlton in the eight.
No. I think pretty much from them up, from Richmond up, Richmond, Collingwood, Hawthorn, Bulldogs, Giants, Suns, Essendon, St Kilda, Geelong, Brisbane, Port, you can't rule any of them out.
Yeah, great. Mm.
So that's 11 teams who very realistically can make it, and then West Coast, and you could, if you're optimistic, you could say Carlton or North.
So I think it's really important for North Melbourne, particularly over the next couple of weeks, because they are maybe on the edge as it stands at the moment, potentially playing finals. They've got a really big 2 or 3 weeks, 4 weeks coming up where their win-loss ratio needs to be close, more wins than losses.
Yep. I like North going into the year too, so I have to say I'm disappointed by how they've been. I know they've had some injuries and things like that, Jack Siebel not playing, but I thought North were a sneaky chance to make it.
Ben Brown needs to step up. He's not playing good footy at all. If you look at the top five on the ladder, Port Adelaide, Brisbane, Geelong, St Kilda, Essendon, that just reminds me of sort of circa 2004.
Yes.
Isn't it? I mean, Port Adelaide on top, absolutely. Brisbane, yep. They made the grand final. Geelong was starting to come good then. I know they had a bit of a dip the year after.
Wasn't that the prelims in 04?
Yeah, it was.
Oh, it's even better than I thought.
Yeah.
And Essendon is still coming down from the 2000-2001 years.
I think Val Febbo, who's been sort of in the media industry for a while, pointed it out on Twitter, actually.
Am I not the first?
Essentially, the top five as it stands right now is what it was like back in 2004, which was also the year Essendon last won a final for all those playing it.
Really? And at the time, Gold Coast and GWS were no more than an apple in Andrew Demetrio's eye. And they're sixth and seventh.
Is that where apples go, Tom?
Yeah, apparently, yeah.
Let's finish off the Fox Footy podcast with our tips and obviously the cuts.
Who's going well in the tipping, Ben?
I haven't done this week's leaderboard.
I had seven. I got seven last week.
Yeah, I think I got seven as well. I'll do the. Of course, you can search on in Google actually AFL tips Fox Footy, and you'll get all the Max Lawton, or you can just Google Max Lawton tips, and it'll come up there as well.
Don't do that anymore. It's not a good idea.
Geelong and Brisbane kick off round six for the Trent West Cup.
Brisbane for me.
It's a good game and a neutral site as well. If this was at the Gabba, I'd definitely tip Brisbane. I still will.
The SCG, I think.
It's the weirdest round. First time, second time in VFL AFL history, first since 1952 that every team is playing away.
Mm.
It's remarkable. So, yeah, Brisbane, I guess.
And we head to a giant stadium, Collingwood and Hawthorn, for the Clinton Young Cup.
It's a really hard game to tip. When you don't have a home ground advantage to sort of default to, you've actually got to think about the football more. And I wasn't really that impressed with Hawthorn last week. I think they're trying hard. Collingwood, I'm also not impressed with, but they've had a tumultuous few weeks. I think it's going to be a really close game. And I haven't locked in my tip yet, Max, but I'm probably just going to ease towards Hawthorn.
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Hawthorn too. I think a lot of people will default to Collingwood, but they've had a... Last week was worrying, the amount that Essendon scored from stoppages against them in particular.
Yeah. That was certainly an outlier, I think. But they wouldn't want that trend to continue, the Pies. Fremantle and St Kilda, this is, of course, for the Brett Peak Cup.
Oh, very good. No, St Kilda for me.
The traditional 12:35 fixture, of course.
Yes.
10:35 a.m. in WA. Good morning, Freo fans. Hope you don't have a big Friday night. St Kilda for mine.
West Coast and Adelaide playing for the Tyson Stengline Cup. At the Gabba.
Who are you going for, Max?
I mean, I don't know how much money you'd have to pay me to tip Adelaide.
I'm going for West Coast too.
Melbourne and the Suns, rather. Tom, you'll appreciate the Matthew Warnock Cup being up for grabs.
Very, very, very good. I'm going for Gold Coast here.
Yeah, Gold Coast.
I'm refusing to tip Melbourne or Adelaide again until they give me two good quarters of football in a row.
Or they play each other.
Or they play each other, yeah. Yeah, one or the other.
Essendon and North Melbourne round out a busy Saturday. This is, of course, for the Shane Harvey Cup.
Of course it is.
Essendon for me. I'm quite impressed with them at the moment.
Yeah, if Jake Stringer hadn't gotten injured, he's been really good this year. Although Dylan Shields...
I thought you were about to fat shame him for a second, Max.
I would never. No. Dylan Shields having the best year of his career. I just want to point that out. Bombers are my tip.
So just pointing out, on Saturday, Maxie mentioned the 12:35 time slot start for Fremantle and St Kilda.
Yes.
We then go to West Coast and Adelaide at 3:05, then Melbourne and Gold Coast at 6:05, which then crosses in with Essendon and North Melbourne at 7:40. And there's a lot of crossover between 5:04 and 5:03. So I've always wanted to say this. Check your local guides as to when the games will be on that channel.
Do you know why this is the case?
Tom, feel free to explain.
So the 12:35 game is at Metricon Stadium and the 7:40 game is at Metricon Stadium. So you can't have a game, if the 12:35 game was at 3 o'clock, there wouldn't be enough time to clean the stadium, clean the rooms thoroughly and prepare it for the night game. So they need to have a big gap between the first and the second games at Metricon. But when you have that big gap, you also present a big gap between the Gabba 3:05 game and the evening games. So to bridge that gap, you need the Melbourne and Gold Coast game brought forward to be in the evening, and therefore you won't have any break in football throughout the day.
Dockers and Eagles need to get home too, part of the understanding, I believe.
It means that Lynchy can't be in two places at once this weekend. I think he's basing himself at Metricon Stadium for the day. He'll be back there, of course, on Sunday for Port Adelaide and the GWS Giants for the Dean Brogan Cup.
Oh, the man who looks like both mascots.
It's a tough game again to tip. Jeez, it's a tough tipping round, Ben. I know Port weren't great last week. I think the Giants were quite good against Hawthorn, but I'm sticking by Port. On first crack, my peg is Port to win the flag, and I'm not jumping off them for the moment. So I think Port.
Yeah, I agree. I think they were just made to look silly by a very dangerous Brisbane team, and I think GWS got a little bit overblown over the last 2 weeks. I'll pick Port too.
The Tom Derricks Cup is up for grabs when Richmond takes on Sydney.
The musician, is he not?
Yes, that's right.
The musician. No, Richmond for me. I think Richmond are going to get a bit of a roll now.
They have a lot of injuries. They're going to have six outs this week.
Yeah, but remember that time they went to Adelaide? Remember they went to Adelaide a couple of years ago on a Friday night with heaps of outs and one?
I think they played, it was Port, like round four or five last year,
maybe. Without the big four.
They're system-based, Max, system-based.
Also, Sydney's the other injury-ravaged team, so they've got a good fixture in that sense. So, Richmond.
Yeah.
I reckon the Tigers have a big win there, personally. And then Carlton and Western Bulldogs ran out the round for the time-honoured Jason Tutt Cup.
Jesus. Jason Tutt, that's a great one for you. The Dogs. I'm all about the Dogs. I'm all over the Dogs.
Yeah, they've allowed something
back.
Like...
They're back.
They've allowed something like six goals a week for the last 3 weeks. It's remarkable. Yeah. And they're scoring. Yeah, Dogs for me.
Yeah.
A big addition of the Fox Footy podcast, gents. Thanks for all your insight, which you can obviously get more of. Get more of your Fox Footy podcast fix from these writers at foxfooty.com.au.